Today is Tuesday, the 24th of February, and you're listening to the World Socialist website. The real state of Trump's America: social misery, dictatorship, war, and an upsurge of the class struggle. WSWS Editorial Board, February 23, 2026. The US President Donald Trump will deliver the annual State of the Union Address Tuesday night before a joint session of Congress. Were it honestly titled, the speech would be called, quote, "The State of the Rich," end of quote, a demagogic exercise in self-congratulation, burying the catastrophic reality of American life beneath a mountain of lies. The speech is being delivered in the year that the United States is to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. On July 4, 2026, the nation will commemorate the issuing of the document that proclaimed, quote, "All men are created equal," and asserted the inalienable right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The founders fought a revolution against King George III. 250 years later, Trump's America offers its own answer to the Declaration's ideals: a government of the billionaires, by the billionaires, and for the billionaires, presiding over armed raids on immigrant communities, a network of concentration camps spreading across the country, children torn from their parents, and the gunning down of unarmed civilians by federal agents on the streets of Minneapolis. Hanging over the proceedings is the stench of Jeffrey Epstein. The Justice Department's release of nearly 3 million pages has shaken the upper tiers of corporate America, exposing connections of billionaires, chief executives, and senior political figures to a convicted child sex trafficker. The files, as WSWS Chairman David North recently wrote, quote, "reveal the social physiognomy of a degenerate ruling class, an oligarchical society in an advanced state of decomposition. Their offences are rank. They smell to heaven." End of quote. Trump himself is deeply implicated. Attorney General Pam Bondi responded to questions about the ongoing cover-up by boasting that the Dow had hit 50,000. FBI documents revealed that billionaire Leslie Wexner was identified as a co-conspirator in 2019, yet no charges have been brought. Emails show Epstein comparing the girls he trafficked to, quote, "shrimp. You throw away the head and keep the body," end of quote. This is the ruling class that governs America. Consider the facts that are buried beneath Trump's demagogy. The national debt stands at $38.4 trillion, or $113,000 for every person in the country, and is increasing at $8 billion per day. The Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, projects the deficit at $1.9 trillion this year, growing to $3.1 trillion by 2036, with debt reaching 120% of GDP, which is higher than at any point in the nation's history. The dollar fell more than 9% in 2025, its worst annual performance since 2017, and remains in bear market territory as BRICS nations increase local currency trade settlements from 35 to 50%. Cumulative price increases since 2020 have been devastating, food up by more than 25%, housing costs still climbing at 3% annually, natural gas up nearly 10%. The level of social inequality is historically unprecedented. The top 1% of households now control 31.7% of all wealth, the highest share since the Fed began tracking such data in 1989. They hold $55 trillion, nearly as much as the bottom 90% combined. The combined wealth of 935 American billionaires surged to $8.1 trillion at the end of 2025. Elon Musk, Trump's partner in dismantling the federal government through DOGE Doge, has seen his fortune balloon to $726 billion. CEO compensation at S&P 500 companies averaged $18.9 million, 285 times the typical worker's pay, up from 21-1 in 1965. CEO pay has risen 1,094% since 1978, while worker pay has increased by just 26%. Tesla has proposed a $1 trillion pay package for Musk, exceeding the total annual compensation of the entire federal workforce. the stock market is not a measure of national prosperity, it is a barometer of ruling class enrichment. But the most sinister dimension of the real state of the Union is the deployment of armed federal agents against the population. In December 2025, the administration launched Operation Metro Surge, deploying 3,000 masked ICE and Border Patrol agents into the Twin Cities, Minnesota, in what the DHS itself called the largest immigration operation in American history. On January the 7th, ICE shot and killed Renee Good, a 37-year-old American citizen and mother of three. On January the 24th, Border Patrol agents shot and killed Alex Pretty, a 37-year-old ICU nurse, firing as many as 10 rounds into him as he lay on the ground. The administration has built a network of detention camps across the country, holding nearly 66,000 people, a 75% increase, the highest level in history. Congress has allocated $45 billion for still more facilities, with capacity projected at 135,000. Children are separated from their parents at a record rate. A tent camp at Fort Bliss, Texas, holds 5,000 people on the same ground that served as an internment camp for Japanese Americans during World War II. 2025 was the deadliest year for ICE detention on record. The Democrats will offer no genuine opposition. Whatever gestures they make Tuesday night will be meaningless stunts. In actual practice, they collaborate with Trump on the issues that matter most to the ruling class. Where their differences with Trump exist, they are centered on tactical questions of imperialist strategy, above all, dissatisfaction with his insufficient support for the US-NATO proxy war against Russia in Ukraine. But on the drive towards war with Iran, the two parties are in essential agreement. The Democrat selection of CIA veterans, Senator Elisa Slotkin last year, Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger this year, to deliver the party's response to Trump's State of the Union, is itself an assurance to the ruling class that they will uphold the military intelligence apparatus while using, quote, left-sounding demagogy from Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to block the emergence of a mass movement from below. This is the real state of Trump's America in the 250th year since the Declaration of Independence, a society riven by class antagonism on a scale not seen since the Gilded Age, ruled by a criminal oligarchy that has dispensed with even the pretense of democratic governance, lurching towards war abroad and dictatorship at home. But there is another side to the equation, and this is the decisive one. The same crisis driving the ruling class towards fascism and war is propelling the working class into struggle. A developing strike wave, the mass anti-ICE protests last year, No King's marches, the ongoing and walkouts by high school students, these are the initial expressions of a social force that neither party of big business can contain. The critical question is one of political program, perspective and organization. The opposition to the Trump administration cannot be entrusted to the Democrats, who are complicit in everything he does. It must be based on the independent mobilization of the working class. Workers must form rank-and-file committees in every workplace, school and neighborhood to coordinate resistance, demand an end to the ICE terror, defend immigrants and prepare for a general strike against the government's program of war, austerity and dictatorship. The building of such communities, organized on the basis of a socialist and internationalist program, is the only realistic strategy for defeating the fascist conspiracy of the American oligarchy. US begins pulling staff from Beirut embassy amid Iran attack build-up. Andre Damon, February the 23rd, 2026. The State Department ordered the evacuation of non-essential personnel and family members from the US embassy in Beirut on Monday amid a major build-up of forces in the Middle East and intensifying preparations for war against Iran. Reuters reported that 32 embassy staff and family members flew out of Beirut airport, while an embassy source put the total at 50 people evacuated. The State Department updated its travel advisory for Lebanon on Monday, warning US citizens not to travel to the country and imposing travel restrictions on remaining personnel, quote, with little to no notice, end of quote. The pullout follows a pattern established before Operation Midnight Hammer in June 2025, when the US reduced its presence at embassies in Baghdad, Kuwait, and Bahrain in the days before B-52 bombers struck Iran's nuclear facilities on June the 22nd. The USS Gerald R. Ford, the world's largest warship, arrived at Suda Bay on the island of Crete on Monday after transiting the Mediterranean and is expected off the coast of Israel within days. The USS Abraham Lincoln carrier strike group is operating in the Arabian Sea. Scores of jet fighters, bombers, refueling aircraft and anti-missile batteries have poured into the region. More than 40,000 US personnel are stationed across military bases and naval assets in the Middle East. The New York Times reported Sunday that this is, quote, the largest military force the US has concentrated in the region since it prepared for the invasion of Iraq nearly 23 years ago. The Washington Post wrote Monday that a senior Persian Gulf official told the paper that Arab countries have informed Washington they would not allow their bases to be used for a strike against Iran, and that Iran's threat to retaliate against any country that supports the US operation has raised questions about Washington's ability to secure overflight rights. Talks between the US and Iran are scheduled for Thursday, February the 26th in Geneva, but the record of US, quote, diplomacy with Iran refutes any belief that Washington is seeking a negotiated settlement. In April 2025, the White House gave Iran a 60-day ultimatum while five rounds of indirect talks were held. On June 8, 2025, while talks were still ongoing, Special Envoy Mike Witkoff sat in a war planning session at Camp David alongside CIA Director John Ratcliffe, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, and senior military officials. Axios reported on June the 10th that Ratcliffe briefed Trump that Israel was on the verge of launching strikes and already had operatives inside Iran. CNN reported on June the 22nd that Trump's advisers had drawn up options for the US to join Israel's campaign, quote, in the months beforehand, end of quote. 5 days after the Camp David session on June the 13th, precisely one day after the ultimatum expired, Israel launched Operation Rising Lion. On June the 22nd, the US launched Operation Midnight Hammer, striking three nuclear facilities at Fordow, Natanz, and Isfahan. Iran's foreign minister told the United Nations, quote, we were attacked in the midst of an ongoing diplomatic process, end of quote. The same fraud was carried out against Venezuela, where Maduro sought to negotiate as late as January the 2nd, 2026, the day before the invasion. Trump said afterwards on Fox News, quote, I didn't want to negotiate, end of quote. The reported debates within the administration point to the massive stakes and consequences of the threatened war. An attack on Iran would involve a vastly greater scale of retaliation than Venezuela, potentially involving significant numbers of US casualties. Iran possesses over 1,000 ballistic missiles, advanced drones, cruise missiles, and a network of proxy forces. It has threatened to strike US bases across the region if it is attacked. The Washington Post reported Monday that Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Dan Kane cautioned Trump and senior officials at a White House meeting on Tuesday, February the 17th, that, quote, shortfalls in critical munitions and a lack of support from allies will add significant risk to the operation and to U.S. personnel, end of quote. According to the Post, Kane warned that the U.S. munitions stockpile had been, quote, significantly depleted by Washington's defense of Israel and support for Ukraine. Two munitions critical to protecting U.S. troops on Iranian ballistic missiles, THAAD interceptors and Patriot missile systems, have been extensively consumed in recent operations, and the U.S. produces only several hundred of each per year. The Times reported Sunday that during the Venezuela planning, General Kane told Trump that there was, quote, a high likelihood of success. But Kane, quote, has not been able to deliver the same reassurances to Mr. Trump during the Iran discussions, in large measure because it is a far more difficult target, end of quote. Trump responded on Truth Social on Sunday by calling the reports, quote, 100% incorrect, claiming that Kane believes an attack on Iran would be, quote, something easily won, end of quote. The people who spoke to the Post directly contradicted Trump's optimistic characterization. Raine, R-A-N-E, formerly Strat4, assessed in a February 19 analysis that, quote, a wider, longer-lasting campaign is more plausible this time around unless a nuclear deal is reached, end of quote. In an earlier January assessment, Raine concluded that, quote, the risk of a U.S. attack on Iran will remain high in the coming days and weeks. While a February analysis found that, quote, U.S.-Iran negotiations remain likely to stall or collapse over irreconcilable demands, sustaining the risk of U.S. and likely Israeli military action, end of quote. The Atlantic Council published a detailed analysis on Sunday, predicting that a campaign targeting regime change, quote, could extend for weeks or months, require much more munitions and expose U.S. forces to more intense retaliation, end of quote. The scale of a potential campaign is staggering. The Washington Post reported that taking out Iran's missile program alone would require hitting hundreds of targets across a country more than three times the size of Iraq, end of quote, including mobile launchers, supply depots, air defense systems, and transportation networks. If the objective is regime change, quote, the target set would expand dramatically to thousands of sites, including command and control nodes, security services, and key buildings tied to Khomeini. Iran has placed its armed forces on the highest state of alert and is positioning ballistic missile launchers along its western border with Iraq and along the Persian Gulf within range of U.S. military bases. Ayatollah Khomeini told an audience last week, quote, the most powerful military in the world might receive such a slap that it won't be able to get on its feet, end of quote. He has named four layers of succession for each military and government role, naming three potential successors to himself and delegated authority to a tight circle of confidants in the event he is killed. The Democratic Party has offered no opposition to the preparations for war. None of its leading figures, including House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, has issued any statement condemning the threatened attack. Far from opposing the war, prominent Democrats have actively endorsed it. Senator Fetterman went on Newsmax to pledge his support for bombing Iran. Representative Gottemeyer opposed a bipartisan resolution by Representatives Thomas Massey and Ro Khanna that would have required congressional authorization for military action against Iran. The Democrats funded every weapon now being assembled for the attack, with 115 House Democrats voting for the $901 billion National Defense Authorization Act in December, and 149 voting for $839 billion in defense appropriations in January. UNAC and UHCP bureaucrats shut down Kaiser Permanente strike without a contract. Mark Wells, February 23, 2026. On Monday, officials from the United Nurses Association of California, Union of Healthcare Professionals, UNAC, UHCP, abruptly ordered an end to the four-week strike of 31,000 healthcare workers at Kaiser Permanente in California and Hawaii. The walkout began January the 26th against rising workloads, chronic understaffing, unsafe conditions, and declining real wages. The strike was shut down without a contract, without a membership vote, and without any substantive details about negotiations. Workers were instructed to return to their jobs by 7 a.m. Tuesday morning. The union justified this betrayal with the deliberately vague claim of, quote, significant movement at the bargaining table, end of quote. But rank-and-file nurses, pharmacists, and clinicians have been told repeatedly that the strike would continue until a, quote, fair contract addressing wages, staffing, and patient safety was secured. Instead, they were directed to stand down without knowing what, if anything, had been won. By labelling the strike, quote, suspended rather than concluded through a ratified agreement, the leadership relied on its discretionary authority to order a return to work on what is described as a critical juncture in bargaining. This manoeuvre effectively bypassed democratic procedures, allowing the apparatus to demobilize the strike without submitting any tentative deal to a vote. This is a flagrant violation of members' basic democratic rights, and healthcare workers should organize to overturn this decision made over their heads. They must continue the strike under new leadership drawn from rank-and-file healthcare workers rather than career officials with democratic control over all future talks to prevent a betrayal. The order to shut down the strike came the same day that 500 operating engineers at Kaiser from the International Union of Operating Engineers, the IUOE, launched their own strike. By ending the largest strike, UNAC-UCHP is isolating and betraying fellow Kaiser workers. The shutdown of the strike comes after similar manoeuvres by the New York State Nurses Association, the NYSNA, to shut down a strike by 15,000 nurses in New York City. After 6 weeks, NYSNA forced an end to the last holdouts at New York Presbyterian with a sellout contract. The strike went on for another week at that hospital after workers overwhelmingly rejected a contract which had been brought to a vote in violation of the union bylaws. Both strikes are part of a broader resurgence of the class struggle, driven by impossible social conditions, which is intersecting with mass opposition to the Trump administration's rampage against democratic rights. Tens of thousands of workers across California are poised to strike in the coming weeks, including teachers at the Los Angeles United Schools District and graduate students from the University of California system. The mass protests against ICE raids point to a growing radicalization in the United States. During the mass protest in Minneapolis following the ICE murders of Renee Good and Alex Pretty, people around the country began discussing the need for a general strike. This shows that broad layers, disgusted with the inaction of the Democrats, are turning to the working class as a new basis for a fight against fascism and oligarchy. UNAC-UHCP is ordering an end to the strike as Kaiser deepens its integration into state and corporate power structures. The healthcare giant recently concluded a strategic partnership with the Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, aligning itself more directly with preparations for large-scale war. Kaiser nurses have already raised opposition to the company's contracts with private prison operators such as CoreCivic and GEO Group, underscoring the deeper political dimensions of their struggle. This convergence is creating the objective potential for a broader movement of the working class, but the union bureaucracy is doing everything it can to sabotage and disrupt this. It is shutting down the strike at precisely the point where it could have been reinforced by mass strikes by California educators. Above all, the bureaucracy is terrified of a growing movement from below that could escape their control and jeopardize their relations with both management and the Democratic Party. For nearly three decades, relations between UNAC, UHCP, and Kaiser management have been governed by the so-called Labor Management Partnership, which was explicitly founded to prevent strikes. Kaiser even threatened to walk away from national contract talks on the grounds that the union's modest criticisms violated the LMP agreement's commitment to, quote, norms and behaviours reflective of mutual respect, trust, and the party's joint commitment to creating a workforce culture of collaborative problem-solving, end of quote. The strike itself, however, shows that there can be no collaboration between nurses fighting for the right of their patients to high-quality health care and corporate executives seeking to maximize profits by slashing spending to the bone. The fight at Kaiser is not just over wages and staffing ratios at one network. It is against the domination of U.S. health care by profit interests. Recent court cases have exposed the, quote, non-profit sham of Kaiser and other major healthcare providers. The corporation agreed to pay $556 million to settle allegations of Medicare fraud involving the inflation of patient risk scores to obtain higher government reimbursements, a scheme that federal investigators said generated roughly $1 billion in improper payments. Even after paying the settlement, Kaiser sought to recover $95 million from insurers through litigation, an attempt to offset losses and preserve surpluses. Just weeks ago, it reached another $28 million settlement over failures to provide adequate mental health services. The fight at Kaiser requires the activation of wide layers of the working class because it is a fight against the domination of the corporate oligarchy over society. This can be organized only by a fight against attempts by the union bureaucrats to isolate workers and limit their power. This requires new organizational forms grounded in democratic control, structures that enable direct oversight of bargaining, transparent communication, and collective decision-making, free from bureaucratic obstruction. Rank-and-file committees can link clinicians across facilities, prevent isolation, and connect the Kaiser struggle to wider movements of healthcare workers and the working class as a whole. Ultimately, the decisive issue is what social interests dominate the healthcare system: the financial oligarchy that subordinates care to profit and war, or the workers whose labour sustains safe and humane treatment for patients? The experience of the Kaiser strike demonstrates that this question demands that workers themselves assume conscious leadership of their struggle. For these articles and more, go to the World Socialist website, wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Carol Diviak.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.